Welcome to Comics,
episode
251.
This week, we talk about
Kill La Kill.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes, see what we're reading next, send us a message, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics.
And now, the cast begins.
Did you guys see the Civil War trailer?
Yeah.
What?
How about that Spider-Man?
That's what everybody's losing their shit about. And, okay, it's like, I kind of get why they're losing this shit. I mean, it's Spider-Man, doesn't matter too much, but he hasn't been part of a Marvel Studios movie ever. So it's kind of, it's neat that now he's back on their proper, like, their turf, and finally Spider-Man can be done correctly since the Sam Raimi years. But
do they have full rights to him, or did they broker a deal with, I think it was Fox?
Yeah, so originally, before Marvel was bought by Disney, they were selling rights to various studios.
Yeah.
And those studios involved Marvel to varying degrees. So sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't. And a lot of those, what happens is, if they make movies continuously using those properties, then that studio can keep those rights. That's why there's a new X-Men every couple of years, regardless if the last one was good or bad. Because if, I think, who makes the X-Men ones?
I think that's Fox.
Is that Fox? So like, if
20th Century?
If Fox does, I think it's like every 3 years. If Fox doesn't make an X-Men movie at least once every 3 years, they lose the rights to the X-Men. And then Marvel Studios will get them back. And it's the same with Fantastic Four. That's why there have been 3 different Fantastic Four iterations, and they've all sucked ass. Because if they ever lose Fantastic Four, or if they ever don't make it, then it's just gone. So yeah, that's why people are kind of losing their crap, because, you know, it means that they've obviously worked out some kind of deal that lets them have Spider-Man in a movie, which is kind of neat, because Marvel Studios is really good at making their own properties, obviously, but...
Yeah, I know it's a whole licensing thing, but it was kind of funny how they would have the end of the first Avengers. It was like in Manhattan.
Yeah.
And like Spider-Man was just kind of like, I'm going to sit this one out, guys.
Yeah.
You enjoy.
Fantastic Four aren't there either. The X-Men never show up for anything. I mean, that kind of works. Like, I mean, the X-Men and the Avengers have always been kind of separate. Like, they don't always do things together. The X-Men are kind of like a special interest group. They do stuff when it matters to them.
The only thing I know of was that X-Men versus Avengers.
Yeah, and the
crossover thing.
And the X-Men insist that they handle things if it pertains to them. So, like, when the Sentinels come, the X-Men insist they want to do it on their own because it's them. And, like, it's because they're mutants that the Sentinels have to exist. So if the Sentinels go crazy and want to kill innocent people, then they see it as their fault. And if other people see it as their fault, then they will view mutant kind more negatively. You know, like, so they feel like they have to handle it, or it'll lead to more discrimination.
And yeah, the X-Men are kind of sequestered more in the Marvel Universe. They don't work with others as much.
Yeah.
I do wonder how the Spider-Man edition is going to affect Civil War tonally.
I don't know. I think this is Marvel's way of... I think what Marvel's doing is smart, because they have the rights back to Spider-Man, at least in some mm-hmm. degree, like you guys were saying, right? But to make a full-length Spider-Man movie would be a big mistake, because I think people are, you know, there's been 5 already, right?
Yeah.
And so people are probably tired of Spider-Man. But, you know, he was pretty pivotal in the Civil War comic.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was kind of a face of the pro-registration, side, so Iron Man's side at first, and then he switches sides, after stuff happens.
Yeah. Yeah, I tried to explain to my wife what all this Civil War stuff was, because she'd seen the trailer for Batman versus Superman. She's like, that's fucking stupid. Why are they fighting each other? And then I showed her Civil War, and she's like, that's also fucking stupid. And they'd be like, yes, but Civil War actually has, like, they have a really good reason for fighting in Civil War, and in Batman versus Superman, they fucking don't.
Well, we don't, what's the reason in Batman versus Superman?
I don't know, like, but it's nothing, it's not, like, Civil War is... I feel like Civil War is more valid because it comes from a comic book source, and Batman vs. Superman is contrived for the purpose of making a blockbuster film. Which isn't to say that it won't be a good film, and that it's not a good reason, but it's the reason exists so that they could make this blockbuster film with lots of badass fights.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's going to be bad. It just means I'm more hesitant to call it as valid as Civil War.
But Batman vs. Superman clearly borrows heavily from Dark Knight Returns. Batman with the armor fighting an old Batman in armor fighting Superman. I mean, I'm pretty sure the whole conflict is going to be early in the movie before they team up to fight whoever the big bad is.
Yeah, Doomsday.
It looks like it's Doomsday.
Looks like it's Doomsday.
Here's the thing. Like, I hope it's good, but yes, I don't know. I'm being optimistic, I guess, by arguing with you here.
No, and there's nothing wrong. I hate shitting on things, so that's why I'm cautious to say I don't. It doesn't mean it's going to be bad. It just that's for some reason it makes me feel like the reason for them fighting is going to be less valid versus Civil War. Like I was saying, I'm trying to explain it to my wife. I had to be like, I had to check myself on how much I wanted to tell her about Civil War, because you caught yourself like saying, but Spider-Man changed because good reasons. Well,
so here's the thing, right? So here's how I think Spider-Man's going to fit into the tonally on the teams. Okay, so. Captain America, like, if you look at the lineup of heroes on Captain America's side, he's got Ant-Man and Falcon, who are both kind of... Ant-Man definitely is kind of a jokey character.
Mm-hmm.
He's, like, the funny guy on the team. Falcon to a lesser extent. And I think even less in this movie. And so, previously, Iron Man had been a character who did a lot of quipping and... was a very funny guy in a sarcastic way, but he can't, he has to be the straight government man in this movie because he is on the pro-registration side. I'm going to call it the pro-registration side, not knowing that if it's actually a registration thing like in the comic.
Yeah.
So I think Spider-Man is going to take on the, for lack of a better term, comic relief on the Iron Man side because Iron Man's got Black Panther, who we don't know anything about, but he's a pretty serious character in the comics, so I don't see him being a funny character. Black Widow, she's not a funny character. Rhodey, War Machine, not really a funny character either.
Rhodey plays the straight man for Tony Stark, and if Tony Stark's also a straight man in this film, then they're both just going to be... neither one of them is comic relief for the other.
Plus, in the trailer, you see...
Rhodey fucked up.
Yeah, so, and then Vision, who is not a funny character either. So I think Spider-Man's gonna fill that role, but I think in that, he's also gonna be, I think we'll probably see him be unsure of his position. He'll be the young character on the team, a little bit naive, and then as the conflict goes on, I imagine he'll start to, He'll kind of be able to take a look at the conflict from both sides.
Yeah,
take the moral high ground. You know what I mean? Regardless of whether Cap's right or Iron Man's right, I think Spider-Man's going to represent
he's probably also going to be a proxy for the audience, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say too.
Yeah, in the beginning, I'm sure he'll be pro-registration, and the audience in the movie will slant pro-registration. Then eventually, as the show goes on, you'll be like, "Oh, actually, no, Captain America's right."
I don't remember who I was talking to. Might have been you, Andy, but somebody was saying that they hope because Thunderbolt Ross or General Ross is in the trailer that it'll eventually will lead to a Red Hulk.
That'd be sick.
Huh.
Everybody coming together to fight Red Hulk. Because it's so giant, so if you look on IMDb and in one of the new Lego sets that's coming out for the movie, Ant-Man is also, so Paul Rudd's character is cast as playing Ant-Man and Giant Man. And then there's a Giant Man in a new Lego set. So who's he gonna fight, right? I mean, there's not a, if you look at the lineup on, Iron Man's team, there's not, a brute strength guy. Maybe you could argue that Vision has a lot of power, but he's not that kind of fighter. So.
Yeah, he's not gonna stand up against a Hulk level kind of thing.
And every time we see Ant-Man in the trailer, he's small. Like, he's riding Hawkeye's arrow at one point.
Yeah.
So I think that there's gonna be, at some point there's going to be a conflict, a bad guy that's going to, make the teams have to reluctantly team up or something. I mean, Crossbones is in it, but I don't think he's going to be the big bad, you know?
No, I don't think he's recognizable enough. I barely know who that is.
Well, so Crossbones was he was in Winter Soldier as Brock Rumlow, and he's in this as Crossbones. He's the Hydra guy who's like Cap's buddy at the beginning.
Hmm.
Anyways, that's that's the long story of how I think Spider-Man's going to fit into it. I could be totally wrong, but you know, I feel like the Captain America movies have been in the top tier of stuff coming out of Marvel Studios. You know, Winter Soldier, even though Thor is my favorite character and I love Guardians of the Galaxy to death, my favorite Marvel movie is Winter Soldier. Just because I think it's a really good movie. And I think it succeeds because it's, well, I think Marvel in general succeeds with their movies because not every movie is the same type of superhero movie. Like Winter Soldier is a spy movie. First Avenger is a period piece, like a World War II period piece. You know, Guardians of the Galaxy is like an adventure movie. Thor's kind of mythological. Iron Man is like a sci-fi movie, but also
they're all their specific niches.
I think Iron Man's probably the most superhero movie. Or no, probably Avengers is the most superhero movies.
The most superhero-y of superhero movies.
They're all superhero movies, right? But they kind of fit into different genres as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it looks like Civil War is going to kind of continue that. It won't be a team movie in the same way that Avengers was.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say for the trailer. It did make me excited to go see it. It's been a while. Honestly, my wife and I had superhero movie fatigue from the Marvel movies, and like I still haven't seen Age of Ultron. I still haven't seen Ant-Man. We did go see Guardians of the Galaxy. But, I mean, there's a couple we just didn't go see, because for a while there, after the first Avengers movie, we had watched all of them that were out since then. I think Thor 2 came out after that, and we made sure we went and saw that. And then we were watching the S.H.I.E.L.D. show, and S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of waned, and as S.H.I.E.L.D. waned, we kind of lost interest in the cinematic universe, and this has gotten me interested in it again. I don't know about her, but I think she's over the whole heroes fighting heroes.
Yeah. Truthfully, Age of Ultron was kind of...
It was bad.
It wasn't that great. Yeah. Ant-Man was good, because Ant-Man, I think... was similar in that it wasn't really, it was like an adventure movie. I mean, Scott Lang is a thief in the beginning, so it's kind of like there's some aspects of a heist movie. Actually, if I think about it, it's a lot of it is sneaking and stealing stuff.
Heisty.
It's very heisty. And Paul Rudd is great as Scott Lang, and, you know, Michael Douglas is really good as Hank Pym, and, what's her name from Lost was really good. Evangeline Lilly.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She was good as Janet Van Dyne. Yeah.
I'll have to go back and watch that, because I'm not interested in the DC ones at all.
And
Suicide Squad looks like so bleh.
Really? I think Suicide Squad looks great.
I'm excited for it. I think it will be fun.
I think since people have tried to make Harley Quinn, like, punkish, and I don't know, I feel like Harley Quinn is kind of like Deadpool to me, and characters that were great and spunky and fun, and then everybody else realized, like, not everybody else, I don't want to be hipster about this, but they were smart and quirky and fun, and then the respective companies that own them realized how much people loved them and cashed it out, and like, I have Harley Quinn fatigue and I have Deadpool fatigue from when there was like a dozen Deadpool movies or a dozen Deadpool titles. And
Deadpool though is so good. It's
that
such
was
a
excellent
movie.
Yeah,
you are really so, like, missing out if you're gonna write Deadpool off just
no
because...
I'll watch it when it's on Netflix. I don't think I'll be able to go out and watch it now.
Yeah,
and the trailers made me not interested because the trailers were just like loaded up with super blue humor, and it's not what I'm into. And
but
Tumblr, I've seen like Tumblr GIF posts of Deadpool stuff, and the stuff I see on Tumblr is funnier than what was in the trailer. Like Tumblr makes me want to see Deadpool more than Deadpool trailer.
There's a lot of, you know, this it happens often with movies where the trailer shows all the good stuff, and then the rest of the movie sucks. Deadpool, like, it was so good.
Yeah,
like. Even the side characters, like Colossus was really good. What's her name? Negasonic Teenage Warhead was really good, too. Like, she was pretty funny. The movie's just
I still
really
can't
good.
Believe that's actually her name.
Well, she's actually... There's actually a comic book character. She's based on a real character. And her character's name is based on a song by Monster Magnet from, like, the early 90s.
Fucking fantastic.
Wow.
But she's really good. Like, and I was looking at some of the concept art because she's kind of like a goth, I guess, character. And they, like, some of the concept art would have been a really poor choice because they could have gone like, it was like your stereotypical sexy goth. But I think the way they went, the way they went was really good. And she first appeared in the Grant Morrison X-Men run in the, remember we read it earlier? It's the one where with Frank Quietly does the art. And they wear the yellow and black uniforms.
Yeah. So amazing or astonishing, one of those.
But she didn't look like that at all. Like, she looked like... I don't think the ones... The comic
I remember nothing of that comic except for it being fucking Grant Morrison and having Professor X strangle his Siamese twin inside the womb.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Fucking
when
Grant
we...
Morrison.
What?
The part that we read...
Rage, you should read Grant Morrison comics. They are fucking
actually,
ridiculous.
From what you said, no.
No, just do it. Just do it. I'm not saying it'll be good, but it will be an experience.
Grant Morrison is the fucking worst. I have
no,
learned this.
No. I'm sorry. He writes some weird fucking comics, but he also writes some of the best stuff I've ever read.
I mean, that's true.
Like All-Star Superman.
Yeah. And Animal Man, Deus Ex.
The whole
really
Batman Inc. His whole run on Batman is really good. So, yeah, he writes some fucked up stuff like The Filth, but he also writes some really good stuff.
Yeah. I just, I don't know. Sometimes you get Morrisoned. You know, you're reading a comic and it's really good, and then, and then you get Morrisoned, and it gets way too fucking weird.
You said Animal Man's really good. I felt Morrisoned when I read Animal Man, when Animal Man jumped out of the comic and was talking to Grant Morrison. I was like,
hey,
okay.
Man. That was good shit.
Sometimes you gotta get meta.
It was actually pretty good, like, honestly.
That comic brought back Mr. Freeze. Straight up, Mr.
Okay,
Freeze.
Well,
we should
talk about movies a lot now.
Yeah, okay. You guys
so
want to talk about
I
this
think,
week's comic?
Here, let me, can I just okay, wrap okay, this up okay. real quick?
Yes.
So, I think Civil War is going to be good. I don't know about Batman versus Superman. Andy, you need to go watch Deadpool.
Yep.
If you can.
And Ant-Man.
Because
I love heist movies.
Ant-Man's really good. It's got some fun cameos and connections to the rest of the Marvel Universe, but yeah. Yes. So, anyways, let's talk about
This week's comic.
It's not actually a comic, but yes.
No, this week we watched an anime. We watched Kill la Kill because we're doing a three-part series with Alex as our guest host. Alex, say hi.
Hi.
He said other stuff before this. I like to call him Rage because he's calm on the outside and boiling on the inside. Anyway, this week for Rage's guest host, we're going to do three episodes about manga and anime and stuff that make you just think, oh, of course this had to come from Japan.
And Alex really
that's Alex's forte.
he knows his stuff when it comes to anime, manga, and Japanese culture, so.
He knows he knows about the dirty parts of Japan, especially.
Just say the word. Just call me a weeaboo. Just straight up say it. It's okay.
I don't know what that word means. I see it on the internet.
It's just a derogatory term for white people who are interested in Japan.
I thought that was otaku.
No, otaku is nerd, but it actually does have a really negative connotation in Japan.
I was just going to say, I think otaku has become okay. And now weeaboo is the bat is what you don't want to be. It's okay to be an otaku.
Yeah. Otaku is okay here. Otaku in Japan still means the stereotypical dude, no job, lives in basement with, you know, in mom's basement, you know, never gets out.
Okay.
And it's not just anime for otaku. In Japan, it means like hardcore geek about anything. So like, if you were really into
Dekotora.
Calculators or race cars or something, and like we're super into that, you could be a race car otaku or a calculator otaku.
Train otaku are huge over there.
Yes, so, that's a thing.
There you go, Andy. Okay. Could definitely be a Dekotora otaku.
Okay, just because most of my Japanese like slang keywords are porn related. Because
that's a
I have learned, because
some examples.
There are words that when I see them tagged, I know not to click on the link, like Fuda. I don't click on that. I've learned not to click on those links. I have been traumatized, and so I remember those words. But Weeaboo, I'm not traumatized by as much, so I don't remember that one.
Well, Weeaboo is it's pretty innocuous. Like, it just means like you're a white guy who's into, or not guy, but a white
person,
Western person who's into Japanese
stuff,
culture.
Yeah. Okay. So that is the word for Alex, and Alex is a weeaboo in the most positive way.
But it's a derogatory term.
In a non-derogative way.
It's meant to be derogatory, but whatever. Okay.
Oh, and I do know
those things like.
I know some derogatory ways to call people nicknames from One Piece, like Oji-san and stuff like that.
That just means old man.
Oh.
Or grandpa.
O-san?
That just still means old man.
But you say it to people who are like in their late 30s. That's what makes it funny.
It's only funny when...
Because that's what they do.
Yeah, but like Luffy could call like a 40-year-old or a 35-year-old lady Obachan, but I could call my grandmother Obachan and it's not derogatory.
Okay. Anyway, this week we watched Kill la Kill. We watched the first 6 episodes because the whole run is 24, 22? Something like that. And
24 with the 25th.
Yeah, we wouldn't have had time to watch all of it. Alex and I watched it all together on consecutive lunch breaks because we work in the same company? Company isn't the word. We work for the same organization. So we watched them
University?
All. University, yeah. but for this show, we're only going to talk about the first 6 episodes, which cover the introduction of Ryuko and Satsuki and Kamiguri and all of them. I think, what is it? They fight the boxing club, the tennis club. Satsuki gets Junketsu. There's the No Late Day. There's the Mohawk guy. And then there's the Sanagama, the dude with, like, the bamboo swords.
Yep. Alex, you're going to have to correct Andy's pronunciations.
No, this is amusing.
Hey, no, dude, we got so much flack from the subreddit. Oh, yeah.
Oh my god, I believe it.
The Gundam subreddit was very unhappy with our series on Gundam. Yeah,
the Gundam subreddit is not good. The Gunpla subreddit, this is what... The Gunpla subreddit loves us. The Gundam hates us.
They were, like, so mad about, like, our pronunciations of the names and stuff like that. It was...
Fucking Reddit.
See, that's weeaboo shit right there.
Yeah, but it's so funny, like...
They can cry about it.
r/Gunpla, Andy shared our pictures, and we were like, and he was like, we're all pretty new at this, and they were like impressed.
They were all
super supportive and nice. It was fucking wonderful. Anyway, let's talk about the comic.
It's not a comic, Andy.
Let's talk about Kill la Kill, because Jen threatened that there'd be fighting words this week. I just want to start off, because I'm the host and I get to do that. What I appreciate about this show is I think by reading through the notes, the fundamental question you have to have is how you view the how you, the viewer, interpret the meaning of how things are presented in this anime. And I firmly, firmly believe that this anime is a satire of the entire genre and the entire, like, outward perception of anime that people have. Like last week, when I said we're going to be watching Kill la Kill and then I enjoy it, and Brandon said, oh, I bet you do. Like, that reaction, like, that reaction, I think, is what this show is making fun of.
That said, I request the floor.
Yes, go ahead.
And I'm actually, okay, so I should put forth that I really don't like this show. But I'm going to try to talk about it this week, putting that bias aside. Basically, in the notes, you argue that it's a satire, and you cite, like, some kind of common tropes.
Yeah, and about it. These tropes are blasted to the extreme, I think, for the purpose of being overt satire.
So, here's my argument. Like, for instance, you cite the,
the huge block
lettering.
The city
lettering is the high school, right? Like, because in anime manga, like, high school is all important as a genre. Like, high school genre is a genre. People watch shows that are just about people in high school, and it doesn't really matter what else happens. High school is life.
And even if the show is not related to high school at all, the students will be high school. Like, the yes. main characters will be high school students, even though the show has nothing to do with high school.
Or middle school.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then there's the ridiculous outfits, the huge, like, action block letters, anime mechanics, like characters, you say, breaking into and out of frame, etc. There's a lot of fight goofiness.
Mm-hmm.
So, first off, I want to lay it out here that I like ecchi, which rhymes with sketchy because it is. Ecchi, for those of you who don't know, are basically
right
like big.
I'm surprised that's like, when you don't know.
Wait, what?
I'm Andy.
Oh, Andy? You don't know ecchi?
Yeah, I'm surprised he doesn't know that.
Ecchi is great. It's like wonderful. It's sexy babes being sexy. It's lewd. And that's the point. Like, the whole thing is, like, you're supposed to get a nosebleed from your boner. So I like ecchi. And, like, I love things like High School DxD or Sora no Otoshimono, which is Heaven's Lost Property in English. So just putting it out there, anyone who's like, oh, you just don't like the costumes. okay. So I think we can say this is satire, and I'm not arguing that it's not, but it's not definitional to satire to be absurd, because you can be absurd and crank things up to 11 without mocking those characteristics. And, like, for instance, as I said, High School DxD or Heaven's Lost Property, in Heaven's Lost Property, Icarus's outfit, she's like the main female character, is more skimpy and ridiculous than what's the main character's name? I'm so
Ryoko?
Bad at this. Ryoko's outfit here. And in that one, she's like a slave who's fallen, an angel fallen from heaven. And the first person she sees, she becomes their slave and can do anything they want. And you can see where that
would go. I need to start
watching Edgy. Right. It's actually quite the charming show. So like there's shit like that. My all-time second favorite anime after Rurouni Kenshin is Samurai Flamenco, which just mishmashes genres together. It does all this over-the-top shit that Kill la Kill does. It's like 11 different genres. It has the crazy action scenes. They become Power Rangers at some point. He uses ridiculous weapons, which are also office supplies. And throughout the whole thing, he becomes, like, the hero and president and king of Japan or something, and he still uses, like, a staple gun and masking tape as his main weapons. So, like, that's super over the top, but that pays homage to all of its genres. So, Kill la Kill is certainly absurd, but I don't know if it's satire, and when I looked this up, I couldn't find anything about how Trigger, the studio who produced it, may have wanted it to be satire or not. I did find a lot of angry feminist screeds, though, on blogs being like, basically, I think a lot of the people were trying to justify their enjoyment of the show by saying it's satirizing it, the treatment of women's bodies and outfits and how the men act toward them, yada yada. But, I mean, that sounds more like people trying to justify watching something that makes them uncomfortable. Although, I don't know. But my point here is that I'm not sure it's satire. It might just be extreme.
Okay.
Because Japan.
I don't know. From the beginning, I always saw it as satire. And I mean, Alex, you can kind of chime in here too, but as somebody who's watched more of the show, I don't know. Because you and I, Alex, we both laughed our asses off, but as the show went on, we started taking it more and more seriously.
Well, because as the show goes on, if you just change a few things, it's like a legitimate sci-fi. It feels like a legitimate sci-fi type of anime if you just kind of cut down on the absurdity a little bit.
But see, I think that's part of the problem, because I'm kind of on the same side of this as Jen. I tried to watch it when it first came on Netflix, because people were like, oh, you gotta check this out. And I just couldn't. I watched like 3 episodes, and I don't know what it is. I just was not, I didn't find it funny or anything like that. And I do appreciate absurd anime, because I like Furikuri a lot. I think that's really
One Punch Man.
And One Punch Man, I love One Punch Man so much. It's like one of the best animes I've ever watched. I cannot sing the praises of One Punch Man enough, but something about Kill la Kill just doesn't work for me. And I think, at least from my perspective, I kind of agree with the people who say that it's not satire, not for the same reasons, and I'm not gonna go on a feminist screed about this, but, to use Jen's term, but I just don't think it says anything. To me, at least, I don't think it says anything interesting about anime or anything like that. Because there are absurd anime that are good. Like, I feel like Gurren Lagann is a good example of an absurd mecha anime, right?
And that's the same creators.
I'm surprised.
Kazuki Nakashima and Hiroyuki Imaishi. Imaishi? Mm-hmm. One of the
six.
To jump in and correct you?
I like Gurren Lagann, but I just did not. I didn't like this as that much. You know, the second time around, I watched it. I watched the first 6 again, and I found it. I liked it more. But
yeah, I was gonna ask, because the first time you said you watched 3 and you stopped, and now you were forced to watch more. Now, how did you feel after watching 3 additional episodes? Any different?
I feel pretty indifferent about it. I don't hate the show. I'm just not into it, you know. I don't know what it is exactly. It just doesn't do anything for me, you know. Which is kind of funny to say, because it's about like skimpy women, right? And I think it does something for a lot of anime fans, but it doesn't do anything for me, even on that level, right? Like
my cousin, she's I think she's 20. I don't know. She has a boyfriend who's super, super weeaboo otaku. Hey, look at me using words. And I think he likes Kill la Kill because of the...
Then to him, I recommend High School DxD.
Well, see, right. Here's the thing, right? So when Ryuko transforms.
Yeah. The first
and
time,
it
right?
Does so like there's, this...
there's the
no,
first...
No, no, no.
She has two levels of transformation. Yeah, okay. Oh, okay. The transformation scene?
I'm talking about the sequence, okay?
Okay.
That reminds me of Sailor Moon. And when I was like in high school, no, probably
so in Sailor Moon where they transform, their boobs flail around?
So,
because that makes me laugh every fucking time.
Not quite as much. There's some bounce to it, though. It's not like Dead or Alive.
I thought Sailor Moon was like a kind of kids show. Holy shit.
But no, here's the thing, right? It is it's an anime for a younger audience, but in Japan, the level of censorship is different. So seeing a holographic silhouette of a girl, of a naked girl, is not that big of a deal. And so that wasn't really edited in the US either. And I remember being like 13 years old and that did something for me. But this, now that I'm, you know,
a fucking adult 30, who's actually had 30, sex,
32 years old, it just does not do the same thing for me. And so, you know, I can see why that does something for people, but yeah,
wait,
anyways.
Jen, that link you just sent, is that from Sailor Moon?
That's no. High School DxD.
Okay, I gotta watch this show.
It's actually really fun. Aside from all the boobs and, like, pole dancing, I like, including those things, I think it's a good show.
See, this is...
I like it.
This is my problem, because now that I, at home, my in-laws are living here, I can't watch these things at home, and I really can't watch them at work.
Watch them on the bus, really, like, without headphones. There you
okay.
go. Yeah.
All right, we'll do. And,
good advice.
And actually, it's some... Okay. So
I'm just really surprised that you'd watch High School DxD and enjoy that and be a downer on Kill la Kill.
So here's the thing. I have no problem with the outfits in Kill la Kill. And, it's the humor that gets me. Gumagori
laughing as he falls down the flight of stairs to chase the kid and that first scene didn't make you laugh?
No, I laughed less. Okay, really? So I have a shitbag confession to make here.
Okay.
Like, you guys are going to be like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
No, shitbag it up. Shitbag it up.
Okay, so Grant and I had previously tried to watch this. I got through the first two episodes. He made it through four before he quit. And then I rewatched it, and I got through 1.5 episodes. And then realized it's subbed and I can read fast. So I watched the whole thing on 2x speed on VLC. Which means it's only 10 minutes per episode. But I sat there like stony faced. Like episode 4 did nothing for me. It was just all gags. And I realized, thinking about this, my problem with it is I don't have a problem with goofy humor. For instance, like One Piece, I loved that. I gave it a great rating, and yeah. I intend to watch it one day, even though I haven't gotten around to it.
Rage, don't hate One Piece because it's One Piece. You hate One Piece because it's 700 episodes or 1,000 issues.
We got 70 in, and I just couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah, that's my fear, that I can't, that I don't have the stamina for it, basically. But here, my issue with Kill la Kill is that it is extremely one-note. In that the jokes may be different, but they're intense and they're continuous, and I feel like it never really lets up. The only time in the first 6 episodes where it did that, I think, is where she and her uniform kind of admitted a friendship for each other when the guy from Nudist Beach was about to get him.
The teacher?
The Mohawk guy.
Yeah. Nudist Beach.
That's a movie.
Yeah, okay, that movie is a solid name. But man, I just... It puts me in a foul mood, like to just be bombarded with the humor over and over and over. I don't know. It's not for me. And I don't know why, because most anime humor I really enjoy, and the crazier the better. Like, anyone who's watched Samurai Flamenco should be astounded that I didn't like this.
See, and that's what confuses me, because normally... I watch anime, and the anime humor doesn't do it for me most of the time. And so I don't know why, because this is super, like, cranked up to 11, like you said, cranked up to 11 anime humor. And for some reason, I find this fucking hilarious. And so I can't put my finger on why I do think this is funny. Like, Mohawk guy with his sewing gun, or his sewing machine gun that shoots out it doesn't just shoot out needles. If you look at the gun, it's a fucking sewing machine.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
yeah, it took me a while to realize that that's what it was.
His grenades or spools, like, it's ridiculous and amazing. And like, when the teacher first says the word nudist beach, right? Like, the franticness of the episode stops. The music pauses.
And it zooms in on his lips.
Nudisto Beach. And then bam, the Flens flare on the nipples. I don't know why that planet's. Oh, God. I don't know why.
Okay, so funny. I have a theory. I have a theory. In Japan, as we said earlier, censorship is like a really big thing. And in yaoi, which is gay erotic manga, yes, that is
yaoi,
targeted to women.
Yeah. Yaoi,
oh, you know,
I know.
Yaoi, very good.
Yes, I do. Yaoi, yuri. yeah.
So they tend to do like graphic effects over any parts in that, because nudity is bad. So a lot of the time, someone just like went over with a Photoshop eraser brush with like a soft edge, and it's just like lens flare looking. And you're kind of like, that's J. J. not Abrams. What anatomy looks like. Yeah, exactly. It's like J.J. Abrams directing Yaoi. I would pay money to watch that. Oh, God.
I would rather watch the Michael Bay.
I think it's I think it's poking fun at the way a lot of censorship is actually carried out in manga. Oh, they censor his nipples and crotch that way with like the beams of light. You're kind of like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah. And yeah. I had a point and then as I said and I forgot it. So normally around this part of the show, I ask you guys what your favorite scenes are, but I don't know if that's a conversation. do you either Alex, of the six episodes we saw, what's your favorite scene? I told you before, Alex, and I'll tell our listeners, my favorite scene is that first thing when you get introduced to Gamagura and he's just laughing as he falls down and you see him out the window as the kid's trying to flee downstairs.
Totally.
That scene sets the tone and it is hilarious.
Exactly. That entire first segment is pretty much why I enjoy the show, is because it's over the top and absurd. You have this, the door to the classroom is like one of those like battleship iron sealed doors. And then it gets kicked in, hits the other side of the wall, slams into the ground, and then all the kids and everyone fly up and then collapse. And that's kind of over the top and absurd. And you have Gamagordi, this huge muscle-bound, he's the disciplinary chair. He can't even fit. He squeezes into the room, and he has to crouch because he's that big. He's that exaggerated. And then, you have the kid running off because he's stealing one of the uniforms, and rather than chase him down the stairs, he jumps out the window, does a swan dive, and is laughing maniacally the whole way. Mm-hmm. That entire first scene, for me, sets the tone that the show's ridiculous, doesn't take itself seriously, and it's like a batshit insane wild ride. Well, for me, at least.
Yeah, and I can also say my enjoyment of the show picked up more as we watched more. The first couple, the first six episodes here, it really is just hilarious. And I do believe that it is satire. Like you're saying, Jen, there's no authorial intent that you can find anywhere. Nobody knows. I don't know if they meant to be satire or not, but I'm firmly of the camp that, the intent of the creator doesn't matter. Only the critical reading, the critical viewing of the audience matters. So I don't care whether they meant it to be satire or not. I believe it is satire. And if they didn't mean it to be satire, it is fucking ridiculous enough that it is satire. And that's my position in terms of like, you know, critical analysis. But looking at it past these six episodes, it really does. It doesn't get more serious because you get like Rainbow Bright Milf. What do they call her, Rage?
Rainbow
Bright Milf. Satsuki's mom. Oh, what is
Ragyo?
Yeah, Ragyo. But the cosplay community calls her something else. I don't remember what. Something fucking ridiculous like that. Anyway, like
I can't remember.
As the show goes on, you learn more about Nudist Beach. But what's really most interesting is, for me, like you eventually find out where the second half of the Scissor Blade is and what happened to Ryuku's father and all that kind of stuff. But what I find to be the most interesting is Satsuki's backstory. And as she's a high schooler, or not high schooler, elementary kid, and you see where she meets Nana, the band leader, where she meets Gamaguri, and it's all fucking fantastic in a non-satire kind of way. And I don't know, because you get those scenes where they're not trying to make it satire, and it endears you to the show, and then they go back to this tone, and it's like, the contrast and juxtaposition is so stark that I have a hard time believing that it's not satire. That said, there's nothing, like David said, there's no point that they're making with this satire, so it's kind of hard. You, like, normally when you satirize something, you do it because you're trying to make a point about the genre. And I don't know what point they're trying to make here if it's satire, but I don't know.
Would you think it's more of a parody with everything's just exaggerated?
Yeah, maybe. I do believe either way they're poking fun at the genre in which they exist.
That's so fair.
I think we could all agree on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I think I think One Punch Man does a better job of that. I mean, that's my.
One Punch Man's pretty fucking fantastic. We need to do an episode on that pretty soon too.
Yes, I'd love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you that honestly, authorial intent doesn't really matter, and that it's really what you get out of it that does. I guess for me, I think my issue is the things that you described. I've also heard really good things about people's reactions to the end of this series. But I don't think we get a good taste of that in the first six episodes. We get very little introspection. It's just kind of like, it's on all the time for six straight episodes. And that's a very intense experience. And I think that's kind of the thing. Like, it relies on the humor to hook you in, but if it can't get you on that humor, it's going to have a hard time convincing you to stay to watch everything else unfold.
That's fair. Yeah, because, I mean, if you don't find the humor endearing, then you don't care to stick around to find out what happened to Ryuko's father. That's fair. So, okay, what was your least favorite scene? Since I know you I'm asking what your favorite was, but what scene made you go, oh, I just wish I could stop watching now, but I have to finish for the show tonight?
Oh, man.
Oh, I can't pick just one, huh?
There's one. I guess it's a tie between the tennis match and the entirety of episode 4.
Which one was 4? The No Late Day.
The No Late Day. It was just...
Yeah, that one's kind of the weakest.
I kind of like the girl who was pretending to have a broken arm ended up betraying them. That was a fun little twist. But the whole thing was just really fucking goofy. And it... I don't know. Like, I was drinking while watching it, too. Like, I was... I was trying to get in the mood for it, and I could not. I could not. I was just like, this is stupid. I think that's my problem. Like, I just look at this whole show and go, this is stupid. So, yeah. And I will try to be generous here. I did like the scene when they were in the bathroom on the floor and she's clutching the uniform, after he tried to get away. And she's the only one who knows that the uniform was actually trying to save her.
And she's the only one that, like, can hear it talk.
Yeah, she's like, oh, we're friends. Because that was actually a really good pause in the action where they worked on some development, like, between their interpersonal interactions.
Yeah. How about you, David? What was your least and most favorite?
Well, I don't think I disliked it as much as Jen. I actually...
You're not drinking the Haterade?
I kind of liked the No Late Day episode.
Oh, yeah?
If I found the thing, probably the episode I found the most that I liked the least was probably the whole garden scene. I really did not like the garden club. I did not like that guy. I don't know what it is, but I really did not like that guy.
Yeah, most of the like 2-star club leaders are all just super fucking annoying. The boxing guy, the tennis club guy,
the boxing guy was not nearly as bad as the...
The boxing guy is probably the least bad, if you're talking annoyance.
Yeah. The tennis one bugs me to all hell.
You love tennis.
I love a couple women who play tennis. I don't know if I actually like the sport of tennis. Well, I don't know what else to talk about with this. I mean, it's because we're so divided. What did you guys at least think of?
You know, now that we've talked about it a little bit more, I do want to know about her father and stuff. So I'll probably watch it again to satisfy my curiosity. But I don't know how long it'll take me or when I'll actually watch more of it.
All right.
But I'm going to give it another try. Okay. Third time's a charm. I mean, I figure I've made it this far already. Might as well give it another.
The old college try.
Yeah. We'll call it that.
Yeah. I think we're running close to an hour now. Do you guys want to go ahead and give this a rating?
Sure.
All right.
Does Alex know the rating system?
Oh, yeah. So, Alex, we rate this stuff on a 0 to 5 scale. 2.5 is average. So if you take it or leave it, it's 2.5, you know. And I, it's entirely subjective. You can give this a 5 if you know it. Like, there's no criteria. There's no, like, review committee or any. The only person who will complain about your rating will be fucking Reddit. So, yeah, it's entirely subjective. What do you want to... And it's also your opportunity to give, like, your closing thoughts on this. I guess I would say it sounds like so final.
If this is all, this is, you know, this is going to be on the internet forever. So
that's true.
1,000 years from now, people will know what you thought about Kill la Kill.
Oh, I better make this count then.
Yeah, I mean, you really need to.
Am I going first?
Yeah.
Somebody else can go. I'll go first.
Yeah, David, you go first.
I'm going to give it a 2.5. I feel like it's a solid meh for me. I mean, it's not... here's the thing, right? I don't really have anything bad to say about it. It just didn't... You know, you guys were saying you laughed out loud when you watched it at first. I did not have that experience. But I don't really hate it. I just don't like it enough to want to watch it more. Although now I'm going to because I'm curious. But so I'm going to give it a 2.5. You know, I think the animation is fine and... you know, it's popular, so I'll give it the old college try, like we talked about.
Okay.
But, 2.5, it's, like I said, a solid meh. Didn't love it.
I'm gonna go next. I'll give this a 4, I want to say 4.5, but I'm just gonna settle with a 4.
Are you sure you just want to settle?
Yeah, I really like it. I like the art style. I like the fight scenes, which we didn't actually talk about too much. And that's another time when this just goes cranking up to 11 with the absurdity. Like, if there's a fight scene and there's any crowd of students around, every single time somebody throws a punch, there's just, like, a dozen students flying to their death in the background. Like, it ain't no fucking thing. When Ryuku is wearing the uniform and Satsuki is wearing Junketsu, her Kamui uniform, and they have their fight together, and it's like, they land the punch, and then the crater happens. And then, because it's cranked to 11, there's a crater of the crater. Like, I don't know. The fight scenes were actually pretty well done, and they were fun to watch and interesting. When they weren't against the boxing club, or the tennis club, or the ridiculous gardening club. Like, if it's a fight, then it's pretty fun to watch. What were you gonna say, David?
I feel like saying that if you like those things about Kill la Kill, One Punch Man just does it better.
Yeah, I know. And that's something I really love about One Punch Man. I mean, if your show is about how badass your protagonist is, and that's the entire premise of the show, then you kind of have to have amazing fight scenes, and One Punch Man delivers on that.
But see, sure. Like, his badassness is the conflict. He's just too badass.
Yeah. He'd rather go to the farmer's market. But I don't know. I'm giving these 6 episodes a 4, but if I was going to give the entire show rating, I would give it the 4.5. Because you, David and Jenny, you're both right. Like, these 6 episodes are trying to grab you with the comedy, and if it's not a brand of comedy you find funny, then you're not getting grabbed, you're not getting endeared to the characters, and you don't really care what happens to them. Which is unfortunate because when the show does decide to try and do some serious stuff later on, you've already lost all of the fucks you had to give and you've stopped watching. So it's unfortunate because the relationship between Satsuki and Kamigori is really interesting, and Kamigori himself becomes an interesting character. He's one of the guys he's for all of the talk of the uniforms and the schoolgirl transformations and the cosplay and all of the stuff that people roll their eyes at with Kill la Kill, I have to say Kamigori is my favorite character in this. And it's the most buff dude-ish dude on here. But he's fucking fantastic.
Okay, we really need to do an episode about One Punch Man, because I was going to make another point about One Punch Man.
Okay, we'll sneak it in. We'll sneak it in coming up. We'll make like a one-shot. Well, we'll make a One Punch Man one-shot.
I really want to say what I was going to say.
Okay,
say it.
So you said your favorite guy in that show is Kamigori, right? My favorite character in One Punch Man is Pooty Pooty Prisoner. Do you know who that is?
I haven't gotten there yet. I've only watched like the first four.
He's this super buff like prisoner. He was in jail, but he always like gets naked and he does like this thing where he changes into an angel, and it's very much like the transformation that Ryuko does when she changed when Senketsu and her like combine, like, except he doesn't have a uniform. He's just naked. Then he has angel wings.
You know, maybe I kind of have an anime thing for buff dudes. Because Major Armstrong in Full Metal is my favorite character in Full Metal, too.
Yeah, he's pretty great.
He's fucking fantastic. And his sister is even better. The Armstrongs are amazing. And I wish my family were like the Armstrongs. But I'm not that awesome. So they aren't. But yeah, this six episodes, this is the longest rating I've ever had. I'm giving it a 4. Story's good, I think, and I find it funny. I don't, maybe it's because I don't know enough about Japanese anime to know that the flailing tits aren't satire, but it seems the level of absurd that it can't be anything but. At the very least, it can't be anything but parody. Like, the way they
flail around. You need to watch more anime.
It can't be anything but. I can't fathom it. I can't. Yeah, so I'm going to give it a 4, because the tits flail like that.
That's why you're giving it a 4?
Yeah, apparently that's what it comes down to.
In a lot of physics, you would give it a 4.
There's a whole new world out there for you, Andy.
I know.
I promise
it's
you.
It's called Ecchi, and I'm going to start watching it on Monday at work before my employees get in.
Do it. You will like it.
Yeah, well.
You want some recommendations?
I would say High School DxD. And
I'll be honest,
Heaven's Lost Property. They're both on Netflix, I think.
I kind of want to check out these now, too.
I should say let's watch them together, but I don't know if I want to.
if you want to go in, like,
now
lighter.
Now I definitely don't want to.
If you want to go in lighter, go with Heaven's Lost Property, because it's really ecchi mixed with cute comedy.
No, I want to go in hard and heavy.
Okay, DxD it is.
All right.
You know,
I don't want to be in the room with you, David, or you, Alex, when I watch this, because I don't know, never mind.
I don't want to either, and okay. I'm sure I, yeah.
Yeah, can I get added to that list, please?
Yeah, no problem.
I don't want to be there.
He's wants to watch it.
Not that I'm going to do anything, it's just, I don't know. There's a thing when you're, I don't know if this happens with teenage girls, but when you're a teenager, well, I guess, like preteen boy, and you first discover what pornography is, but you don't really know what to do with it. If you find your dad's porno VHS stash, it was VHS when I was growing up, and you pop it in the player, you don't know what's going on. So you have a friend come over and you have them watch it with you, but neither one of you know what's going on. You just know it's something you're not supposed to be watching, and you're just both awkwardly sitting there. It's a weird prepubescent experience.
This growing up, very weird, all but... my friends were dudes, and I was that friend. And yes, it was weird.
Yeah, it's awkward, and I don't want to relive that experience with any of you. So I don't want to watch High School DxD with you.
This is fair.
If it's on Netflix,
yeah,
it can't be that bad,
right?
But, it's not okay. That bad.
No. I don't know.
If you need, Funimation does have the uncensored series. Just saying.
Right. Funimation.
So there you go.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Hey, Funimation does like sweet dubs. I just want to say that. If you're going to watch dubs, watch theirs.
All right. Jen, what's your rating of Kill the Kill?
Oh, man. Okay. You know, just unapologetically, Spawn minus one.
Oh, man. That bad, huh?
That bad. Jeez, so I think like that's a negative one or something.
Alex, Spawn is the worst thing we have ever reviewed and read. It is. I think we all gave it a like negative whatever we possibly could. It is fucking
terrible.
I'm pretty
sure I gave it a zero.
I don't know.
I think we all gave it a zero.
I still own it though, Alex, so if you want it, I can give it to you.
You can experience it. So, yeah, this was Spawn minus one for me. It was...
I feel bad for Kill la Kill.
I don't.
For making you watch
I don't. You don't need to. I've already seen it. But I will say this. I watched it sped up by 2x to make the episodes half as long. And after episode 3, I took a break to binge watch the entire first season of Psycho Pass again for like the third time. I don't know why, because generally I don't like something and I can give reasons that aren't just, it's fucking stupid. I can't verbalize it. It fills me with an insane rage. It's not for me. Go watch Samurai Flamenco instead.
That is an understatement.
Okay. There you go.
And what about you, Rage? Now that you've heard us give our ratings, you understand how not serious this is.
To be quite blunt, it'd be a 4. Because as much as the humor is not for Jen, it is completely up my alley. Like, I loved episode 4. I loved the absurdity of it all. That first scene with Gamaguri, like, hooked me in completely. Like, Smugu, the guy with the...
The Mohawk guy?
The Mohawk. Like, his entire character, like, I love. He's a gorilla, like, a gorilla combatant, but all of his weaponry is...
Sewing
or tailoring base. Like, yeah, the sewing gun, the needle ammo, the spindle grenades. And then he shoots something out of his wrist. It's like a two-prong thing. I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
I have no idea what it is. I don't even know if it's tailor related, but because it's him, I'm going to assume so.
Yeah.
But it's just completely over the top, and I love stuff like that. So, yeah, it had me from the first 5 minutes.
It had you at hello. All right. Well, that's it for Kill la Kill, which is... I don't know when the last time we had this diverse of a rating on a show or a comic, which made it fun to talk about. But next week, we're going to read Aria. It's all...
Aria?
Is that how you pronounce it? Aria? Aria? I'm just
Aria.
Pronouncing
well,
it
Aria,
like...
probably in English. Aria, yeah.
Aria. We're going to read the first volume by Kozue Amano. It collects the first 5 issues of the manga, so we're going to read the manga for that one. Is there an anime for that one, or is it just the manga?
Yes, there is. There is 2 seasons.
Okay, but we're going to read the manga, because we're recording these in quicker succession than normal, and I want it to go fast. So we're going to read the manga so I can do it on the bus and do it quicker. So yeah, we're going to read Aria Volume 1 by Kazuo Yamano, collecting issues 1 to 5. All right. That's it for this week, everybody. Until next time, goodbye!
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Laters.
Nudisto teacher.